Hello and welcome to this BowlersDesk.com political podcast with me, Matt Bowler, and Rick Epps, San Diego's political professor. This time we sat down and talked about some local politics. There's a local political commission that I think should be kind of outed for their immature behavior. And we talked Ukraine and Crimea. Rick had made some predictions in the past that came true. And now we looked into his crystal ball and see what he saw for the future of that region, what that meant for the United States, what that meant for us. As always, if you have... Whoa! That's my son in the background. If you have any... if you want to get on top of your political soapbox, you can do that by hopping on ours. Man, let's see if I get that right. If you want to hop on your political soapbox, you can do that by hopping on ours. There we go. Just call 619-663-4531. 619-663-4531. Remember to listen, post, repost, and share. Enjoy. Okay, so this time, hollow. I feel like I sound really hollow where I'm at.
Yeah, you do sound a little bit hollow, but that's okay.
That's okay. You know, I'm in one of the empty study rooms here in downtown San Diego, and Rick Epps is joining me over the phone.
So, how you doing, bud?
I'm good.
Wish I could be down there with you. We haven't done this in a while, at least for me.
So I know it's been a while. You know, the election, the mayor's election ended, and then we just kind of took a break, took like a little vacation. I did one other one in between then and now, but still been a lot of time off.
Yeah, I think our fans would be happy to hear now we're back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird to think that there are other people in the world besides you and I that listen to this.
I know it is weird,
but people are into this, which is nice to hear. It's always nice when somebody goes, "Oh, hey, I heard that from you guys." And it's always weird to hear in a politician's press conference, and you can tell they're kind of referencing something that we talked about at least I like to think that they took from listening to us. So.
They probably did. I think they got their stuff from us.
Too. All the good ideas. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We only have good ideas. Any of the bad ideas are other people's fault. Yeah. I wanted to start with today. There was an interesting thing that happened today. City Council has their salary setting commission. Uh-huh. And today the salary setting commissioner, chairman Bob Ottilie, he is going to say that for the first time in the commission's 41-year history, he's going to recommend no adjustments be made to the city council people or the mayor's salary. Now, the mayor makes $100,000 a year. A councilman earns $75,000 a year. Now, his reasoning for this is because he has made recommendations for the city council to give themselves a pay raise, and they've turned it down in the past for political reasons, and his reasoning is, well, they've turned it down in the past, so why should I bother giving them a recommendation now? It's so juvenile in a way. Why should we even bother giving them a recommendation for a raise, cost of living raise now, because they've just politicized everything that we do, and it's so wrong on so many levels. This is the quote that gets me, and it just kind of shows how out of touch this guy is with the rest of San Diego. He says, We pay so little that only the people that can afford to take a job as a council member or a mayor, someone who doesn't earn $75,000 a year, a young person with very little experience who's willing to devote his career to low income, or the wealthy. So we leave out everyone in between, all the talented folks. So what he's saying is that all of the talented folks in the private sector clearly make over $75,000 a year. And that nobody else is going to run for office. So this is why I'm not even going to bother. It's just a real juvenile, infantile way of responding to this. It's dumb on so many levels. First off,
what was funny about it, they actually tried, the proposal was to raise their salary by $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, it was $125,000 for the city council and $235,000 for the mayor.
Yeah.
And I like what David Alvarez said, which was, he thought it was a joke they even voted on it. You know, they were voting for this, that nobody ran on the council, for city council to get rich. And, you know, it's not the type of job, but $75,000 a year is still decent money.
That's decent money. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. This guy pissed me off so much when I read this, because it's like, look, the AMI for a family of four in San Diego is like $71,000 a year. And that's with two adults working full time.
Yeah.
You know, and those people most likely, you know, a lot of people in San Diego go to college. A lot of people make that kind of money, work full time, and don't even make the $75,000 a year mark. It just seems like this guy is so out of touch with what people make and how much it costs to live here, and maybe he should be more concerned about that than.
Well, but the funny thing about it is, here's the funny thing about that: $75,000 a year probably be it. Upper middle class salary here in San Diego.
Yeah, no, seriously, you know, and that's working class. Yeah, yeah, and yeah. That's the sad thing, is that the cost of living here is so out of whack with what it costs to live here. That also that this guy would get pissed off that politicians' salaries would be politicized. For him to actually be upset that politicians' salaries would be politicized is ridiculous unto itself. It's like, of course they're politicized.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to play that political game right now. It's like the timing couldn't be worse, and especially after coming through what we've just come through, and just to kind of get back on our feet and get back to business. And now it's like, for this is your first order of business. I need you to take that money and fix my street. To fix my damn street.
Yeah.
And the four-inch potholes that I have all up and down the street.
Yeah, and you know what? Of course, and of course, they're all going to vote against it, you know. And this is giving that new Bell ordinance some attention, right? The Bell ordinance is where they want to say, okay, well, if you vote in a pay raise, it won't come into effect until the next term, which is fine. You know, that seems fine by me. You know, this way, most of the city council people were out of there because we have term limits, and so they won't get to enjoy that pay raise. Anyhow, so if they do vote in a race, it won't affect them.
But the crazy thing about it, you think about it, I mean, most people, when they get an annual raise or any cost of living increases, I mean, the best of days is about 5%. You know, if you get 10%, that'd be like magnanimous, right, for most normal human beings.
Yeah.
And then they're talking about, you know, over 100% increase in salaries, 125-130% increase in salaries.
Yeah, and that the people aren't, and that these jobs aren't competitive. And it's like, you look at our last mayor's race. What do you mean this job isn't competitive? You know, and that we're not getting the most talent. I don't think that it would matter if we paid $500,000 a year for this mayor, our mayor's job, or $100,000 a year. I think we'd have the same people running.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, because it's the money behind them, not so much them, it's the money behind them.
Yeah, and it's never really about that position anyhow.
Well, plus, you think about it this way, most of them also have private ventures and private interests, so it's because of maybe their salary. Most of them, and it translates into, you know, the best breakout. So not that it's not a full-time job, but it's a full-time job, but it's not a full-time job.
Yeah,
you know, in some ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's a decent, fair, reasonable salary. Is it fair for San Diego? You know, one could argue that maybe if you're trying to make it a middle class job, and you try to figure out what the median middle class salary is in San Diego of cost of living, does it fit the criteria? Well,
you know what?
In San Diego probably does.
Yeah, but for this guy to get upset, he actually ended up going on PBS, and he's been all over the place complaining that no one's paying enough attention to him. For him to get upset at this is ridiculous.
Yeah,
he should be saying, "Look, you know, this is what I think they should be paid. This is what I think the cost of living in San Diego is." And then just kind of accepting that, and then they can use that to work towards maybe helping everyone in the city earn the money they should be earning for the job they do.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, for him to kind of be petty, well, you're not going to pay attention to me anyhow, so I'm just gonna say don't do anything because it doesn't matter what I do. It just comes off so juvenile, and it really kind of pissed me off.
Well, the funny thing about it, the city council members are also, they know politically the good time to shut up or not to suggest that it's a positive step too, because that would be a huge debacle.
Can you imagine the political blowback on that if they all gave themselves 110% raises? I mean, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I think it's crazy.
Yeah, no one would no one would take them seriously after that. It would be, people would be drummed out of office pretty quickly. I can already hear the calls for recall on the idea that you would give yourself 110% raise. It's just ridiculous. This guy, I mean, it's like, look, the salary setting commission needs to be there, but at the same time, they need to accept kind of the realities of the city. And it just shows how out of touch these lawyers are that get appointed to these positions, and how out of touch they are with the rest of the city. It's unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. You know? No, absolutely. Completely out of touch. I mean, completely out of touch. I mean, the city council members are city workers. That's a pretty good. That's a salary. Yeah. If you look at the cost of what are salaries of city managers and some of the leadership in the city of San Diego, it's probably within proximity. You know, and
yeah.
I mean, some of the jobs pay a little more than others, but I mean for what they do, I mean, at some point they should not get a raise. No, of course, not everybody deserves a raise at some point. But at this point, it's really, the timing's bad and the politicization of it is really terrible.
Yeah.
And that's the part I dislike. And he used it for his own political platform.
Yeah, I wonder if this guy's ulterior motives are, right?
Yeah. We should have him on our next podcast.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll jump right on it now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, after that, let's switch over to the Ukraine. That's probably the hottest topic here.
You know what? I hate being, it's funny. I miss, I enjoy being right. I hate being right about this. This is one of those things that, I had mentioned on the news, last week about that the country could break up, lo and behold.
Yeah.
Almost the only way to avoid war is to divide the country up.
Which is weird. I mean, should we be looking at the world and dividing up democracies based on cultural identity? I mean, we don't do that in the United States. That seems to be a bigger question about the nature of how we see the nature of democracy in the world.
Right. Well, here's the thing about this. It's interesting. When you think about after the end of the Cold War and think about what happened in Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia, you had two countries that have been subdivided for the second time in the last 50 years, 60 years.
Yep.
And the reality of most of it was division along ethnic lines. And that's really the crux of the issue. The question is, at this point, I think it gets complicated for us regarding our foreign policy and how much pressure we can really bring to bear on Russia.
Yeah.
When the Crimean people have already, voted to secede themselves.
Yeah, but that would be like if Northern California decided to vote to secede,
If you look at it through our eyes, and we're a republic, and the question is whether our view of that picture, resonates.
But are these Crimeans or are these Russians that were imported, as the result of essentially an earlier occupation, right? And they
that would be an interesting thing to analyze. Would be to figure out, of the demographic within the Crimea, which is the peninsula, almost an island.
It's got a little isthmus connecting it, but.
Yeah, but it's almost an island. It's where all the rich Russians and all the military oligarchs all lived and hung out.
It'd be like if Sicily voted to secede from Italy.
Exactly.
Sicilians see themselves as unique culturally, but Italy would never let them secede.
But is this
really more about NATO expansion?
Well, that's one of the many questions that has to be answered. Because the role of NATO, the role of Russia, what's Russia's strategic interest here? Is it really about the Crimean people? But what I was going to say earlier, I think it's interesting to find out. The demographic of Crimea. How many of them are really pro this sort of secession, or whether is there a significant number of them that do not want to secede, and if so, I'm sure. Well, here's what's going to probably happen: that those who don't want to be part of, the Russian Republic or Federation, are probably going to have to relocate to another part of Ukraine. The other part of the question that gets complicated here is what happens to eastern Ukraine. Is that going to also end up going to Russia? Because a lot of people in eastern Ukraine are also, or do they just expand the Crimea to cover more area and then to pull those people in too? So that the territorial boundaries shift. And if they do, then what does that leave for Ukraine itself?
Let's play. I guess this is Obama's last sort of official talk on the Ukraine here. Let's play this. It came up last week.
Good afternoon, everybody. Before Jay takes some of your questions, I wanted to provide a brief update on our efforts to address the ongoing crisis in Ukraine. Since the Russian intervention, we've been mobilizing the international community to condemn this violation of international law and to support the people and government of Ukraine. This morning, I signed an executive order that authorizes sanctions on individuals and entities responsible for violating the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine or for stealing the assets of the Ukrainian people. According to my guidance, the State Department has also put in place restrictions on the travel of certain individuals and officials. These decisions continue our efforts to impose a cost on Russia and those responsible for the situation in Crimea. And they also give us the flexibility to adjust our response going forward based on Russia's actions. We took these steps in close coordination with our European allies. I've spoken to several of our closest friends around the world, and I'm pleased that our international unity is on display at this important moment. Already, we've moved together to announce substantial assistance for the government in Kiev. And today in Brussels, our allies took similar steps to impose costs on Russia. I am confident that we are moving forward together, united in our determination to oppose actions that violate international law and to support the government and people of Ukraine. And that includes standing up for the principle of state sovereignty. The proposed referendum on the future of Crimea would violate the Ukrainian Constitution and violate international law. Any discussion about the future of Ukraine must include the legitimate government of Ukraine. In 2014, we are well beyond the days when borders can be redrawn over the heads of democratic leaders. While we take these steps, I want to be clear that there is also a way to resolve this crisis that respects the interests of the Russian Federation, as well as the Ukrainian people. Let international monitors into all of Ukraine, including Crimea, to ensure the rights of all Ukrainians are being respected, including ethnic Russians. Begin consultations between the government of Russia and Ukraine with the participation of the international community. Russia would maintain its basing rights in Crimea, provided that it abides by its agreements and respects Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. And the world should support the people of Ukraine as they move to elections in May. That's the path of de-escalation. And Secretary Kerry is engaged in discussions with all of the relevant parties, including Russia and Ukraine, to pursue that path. But if this violation of international law continues, the resolve of the United States and our allies and the international community will remain firm. Meanwhile, we've taken steps to reaffirm our commitment to the security and democracy of our allies in Eastern Europe and to support the people of Ukraine.
All right, so then he goes on to, you know, a little bit more rhetoric, but I think he brought up some really interesting points there. The first one is like the government that's in power there was the government that was legitimately elected. So Ukraine had an election, they voted in this guy, and that's the guy that they want. And then the people made that decision, right? They made the decision. They wanted to side a little bit more with the euro than they did with Russia. So it's not like this didn't already happen. And so, you know, to divide up the country regionally so that Putin can say, well, these people are voting more with me or agree more with me, therefore I want them. You know, that'd be like if we divided it up, the Gore-Bush, and went, oh, well, Florida went more with Bush, therefore we should, they should be able to go with Bush for the election because they went more with Bush, as opposed to saying, well, the whole country had an election, here's the winner, here's the loser, and then moving on.
Well, but you know, but this is sort of an interesting paradox because think about how our own presidential elections run, right? We have we only have two states where it is basically based on the numbers of percentage of vote, where the other one, it's all winner take all in 48 of the state. And that means you're basically taking in every single state, those whoever wins, all those votes that are completely against that one other individual, and shoving them into the hands of the other individual who they may completely ideologically disagree with. And that can be whether it's 49-50 versus 51%. I mean, it can be just that close. And so, consequently, all those votes, we sort of swallow the Kool-Aid, if you would, because we allow that to happen instead of having to be proportional. Which, personally, if you ask me, I think it'd be much fairer, or just go to a popular vote and call it a day. But so we do this all the time and just make decisions based on, the winner take all. So the question is going to be, come March 16th, there's a referendum that's on the table at the Crimea.
Yeah, but the issue then for Putin and the Russians is who gets to vote in this referendum, right?
Exactly.
He only wants people that agree with him to be able to vote.
Well, but that's, this is typical. But this is, let's face it, this is typical Russian politics. I mean, Russia, as you know, is run by the mob and Russian mob and the oil oligarchs, natural gas oligarchs, and a few leftover guys from the Cold War. That's who runs Russia. And consequently, the policies that we sort of associate with democratic values really don't apply. And Russia really is just this side of being a failed state. If it wasn't for the oil and the natural gas, Russia would really be, it was actually after the end of the Cold War, almost became a part of almost like a third world country, until the oil reserves and the natural gas reserves started generating income for them. So. But on the psychological level, you could almost see where, this is not a surprise in terms of the game that Putin's playing. And ideologically, they've always had their foot on Ukraine's neck. Nothing unusual there. I mean, for the last almost 100 years, they've had their foot on Ukraine's neck. They've decimated the Ukrainian economy, and they've done this to trying to bring political pressure so they could take some of their strategic position and rival resources. And now it's coming home to roost. The question is, can we publicly say, decry the lack of democratic process? Well, of course we can. The question is, how far should we go into this endeavor? Or should we just make our voices known in our displeasure? Or do we try and push the agenda further, which by creating sanctions, which we can certainly do, and that would certainly hurt them. But at the end of the day, I have several friends in Ukraine. I'm just in the Kiev area, and there's some who are not happy about it. One of them, their family lives near the Crimea. They don't live in the Crimea, they're right near the border area, so they're concerned about having to maybe relocate because of the situation. But this is nothing that this is a political. Much, I think it's more political than it is even in terms of military. This is a much more political issue than military issue.
Yeah. Do you think Putin really gives a shit about the ethnic Russians, or are they just? It's just a handy propaganda tool.
Absolutely, it's a handy propaganda tool. It's an easy one too, though. It's an easy one to pull. And the thing is, we have to unfortunately sort of separate our own sort of values and mindset about these issues to be able to kind of look at it through a different lens, and that's hard for us because we haven't been socialized with their way of life, mm-hmm. but. The way of life in Ukraine is hard. It's the incomes are low, and Russia keeps them low, and it's really blighted and has been continually blighted by Russia. And we've never helped them before, so now because Russia's making the push forward, now we want to go in and be able to say how terrible it is. But we could have helped a long time ago if we had chose to.
Do you think now is a good time for us to do this, because the summertime is coming up? We're coming out of winter. Right, at least in the northern hemisphere, right?
I'm San Diego, that's for sure.
yeah, that's for sure. Right, but the dependence on Russian oil is going to drop because the need is going to drop. You're not going to freeze to death in the spring or summertime, and then with these sanctions in line, do you think the Russians are going to care if it's harder for them to get the kind of consumable goods that they're used to getting from the West? Or will they simply just turn to China and just get all their stuff from there?
That's exactly what I was going to say. whatever they can just work with China and get it go to the back door and get what they need. at least in the short term. Now, of course, the Chinese aren't going to do that without some favors from them as well. So what the United States should be concerned about is that it would be a growing Chinese-Russian type of security agreement or economic agreement. That would be a great concern. Now, of course, we could actually hurt the Chinese with that because we have, you know, we are their economy for the most part, and we have been a big part of their economy, their economic success and growth. Now, if they can diversify their asset, which would be a smart move for them, then that's so much the better. But diversifying with Russia, other than oil and natural gas, would not be a good ploy because Russia doesn't have enough resources to make it worth their while, I don't believe. But certainly it creates a problem but for us, just in terms of security and also economics, if Chinese decide to back Russia on this issue and come to their rescue, if you would.
What's the right is just kind of, their tact is always just blame Obama for everything, which is kind of a weird tact because a lot of times their criticisms don't amount to much. But their approach has always been just blame Obama. For whatever it is, you know what I mean? You stub your toe, blame Obama. But compare the Ukraine now with Georgia and how George Bush reacted. You know, I mean, a lot of people are drawing those parallels and going, look, economic sanctions, working with European allies, visa bans, asset freezes, those are really the only things we can do because we're not going to go to war with Russia over Crimea. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
So this is the
nobody wants it to happen, really. We can pontificate, we can make all kinds of bellicose statements, and we can certainly, bring some pressure to bear. At the end of the day, though, we really don't have any control over the situation. We really don't. And we have very little leg to stand on with regard to it, too. I mean, we just don't. This is one of those things that's really almost out of our hands in many ways. Now, the UN can certainly bring brought up, they can shine a big light on it and bring a lot of, create an international backlash that hopefully would allow for them to be squeezed economically in some ways.
But do you think the Russians care? I mean, because look, the people in charge aren't going to suffer.
The people in Russia will suffer as always.
Do you think that the people in charge care whether or not the plebes of Russia can get the things or have the lifestyle that they were promised? Do you think they give a shit whether or not they suffer?
I know Putin doesn't give a shit, other than the fact of being concerned about getting reelected, but he can always twist that game too. So no, I don't think they really care. I think the Russian people have been repressed for a long time. It's almost like a sociological reality that of just being sort of being repressed for so long, and yet for a lot of them it's still better than what they had, even though in our eyes it's not better than what they had. That's really the big problem. Some of them, it's like, okay, we don't mind having a heavy hand person over us as long as they're not sending us to Siberia. You can be poor in Moscow, you don't have to be poor in Siberia anymore, And that's really one of the big issues. There's this the sort of mindset of how the people are so used to being sort of pushed that way, and whether they've actually given up. And they got there, internally inside Russia. I mean, the question is, who would ever stand up against Putin, and what kind of reprisal would come your way if, in fact, you did try to take some sort of civil disobedience or civil action in order to deal with the situation? That would be very problematic.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be petrified to say anything because, he would just, people would be scared. Putin would just kill you because he's done that. He does that to people that say mean things about it.
That's it. I mean, it's just, you would sip on your tea and the bad things can happen to you very quickly, especially if you're politically in the mix, bad things can happen very quickly. So you have to be very careful about the road that you go down. Putin has really positioned himself inside the political infrastructure in Russia to be almost like the czar, if you would, he's just a czar without all the crowns and gold and crap. He's just a quick, but he still doesn't make him out of czar. It just makes him a different type of czar,
Yeah.
Which which is playing well into the, again, it plays well into the psychology, even though they're lopsided. And then you have to deal with the reality of young Russians, and now they want to, you know, maybe they don't really care about this stuff. They just want to go and do their thing and not be bothered with the politics, just like a lot of young people in America. So they get sort of run around simply because they're not paying attention to their own politics either. You know?
Yeah. Now,
and that becomes a problem.
Now I hear that the Russians are also doing these like very kind of 1940s style propaganda within Russia, very Pravda-esque, about, you know, the Americans corrupting the minds of the youth, and anyone who disagrees with them is a fascist. You know, we're at the same time both, you know, too stupid to win and so unbelievably manipulative that we're corrupting all of their young people and pulling them away from the communist revolution. You know, just we're everything that is bad in the universe.
Yeah, I mean, they make us like the big evil, which is not real, but it's not that good. But certainly
people buy that? Do Russians buy that? Because Russians I speak to here. Now, these are Russians that are in the States. You know, I haven't been to Russia. But, you know, you would think if you're there, you would just kind of by nature know that so much of what you're seeing is bullshit.
Well, but again, it's like if you're being mind screwed, it's easy to continue to follow that belief or just be ambivalent to the political ramifications, you know. And that's, I think that's what happens a lot. I think Russia's learned a great skill from Western democracy, which is, you know, create ambivalence, and then you can do whatever you need to do, free of impediment. And we're just as guilty of it as anybody, and that becomes a real problem.
Yeah, but I mean, our propaganda machine doesn't come from the government. It seems to be more of a it's a different process. I mean, you know, you do get pressure in your newsrooms to do things a certain way, you know, and it can come from management, but it's usually about, you know, not upsetting an advertiser in a way, but it's not necessarily portray this politician in a favorable light and make these people out to be our enemies. Although that does happen, and it did happen with 9/11. People felt tremendous pressure to not be critical of a lot of the presumptions being made, and to report that you know, particular ethnic groups were more, particular political groups were more likely to be terrorists than others. I mean, that does happen, but it's definitely not the same kind of way.
Yeah, no, not the same kind of way. No. But again, you know, the I mean, part of the, you know, I mean, it's one thing that even within democracies, you struggle to maintain what we call democratic principles and practices, is because the citizens become marginalized. And imagine in a scenario like you have in Russia, where the citizens were historically marginalized, that you give them a little bit of freedom. A little bit of freedom is better than nothing to them, and that makes it easy to sell, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's, I mean, there will be some, I mean, even today, you know, yet, the Prime Minister Yatsenyuk has been, you know, very open about his, you know, when I went to sort of separate the Ukraine, and of course Obama's going to be meeting with him. And they're going to be discussing this issue and trying to find a peaceful resolution. I don't believe Ukraine has the capability to deal with the Russian military. I just don't see that happening.
Do you think the Russians would react militarily?
If they do, it would be limited. I don't see it being, you know, an extreme.
They would just kill the people they don't like.
Exactly. Exactly. But you try to minimize. You don't want to look like you're going to come, you know, guns blazing and, you know, wipe out everybody. But you certainly, you know, they'll use it to just by, you know, saving the day for the people, for the Crimean folks who are pro-Russian, and saving them from, you know, being led astray by the those who believe on the other side of the aisle. And that's a problem. That's something that we really don't have any control over. We don't have any control over that. And that's the part that frustrates a lot of us. You know, we don't have any ability to really dictate to Russia. And Russia's proven already, his, you know, and just dealing with Obama, he's proven that he's, you know, he doesn't really care. You know, he never really pulled the trigger on anything other than a lot of strong statements. We never really have followed the follow any edicts that would allow us to really do something. Now, this time, he's acting like he's really going to do something. And that's, you know, it's all well and good. If we can find something to do that kind of brings it to the negotiating table, then that's all well and good. However, you know, whether or not that's sustainable, that, you know, that's subject to question. And, yeah. And whether you can get the U.S. people behind that is also subject to question.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, we don't. Most people don't even know where Ukraine is.
Yeah,
I think it's, you know, so.
Yeah, Americans seem really conflicted about this.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah,
because at the same time we want to say, well, we don't want to, you know, tolerate this kind of thing, but and we want to support, you know, democracies around the world. But then on the other hand, you know, we're not willing to put. You know, we're not going to attack anybody over this. We definitely have a limit to this, and everyone knows we have a limit. Europe has a limit. They're not going to react militarily. So
exactly.
Putin kind of has a leg up on this because he can react militarily, and nobody would still respond at that, assuming it's relatively limited. You know, if he didn't overreact, you know, if he killed hundreds of thousands of people, that probably would be a problem, but he could probably, you know, go in some targeted strikes and get away with it.
Yeah, he probably could.
And he's probably already got those planned out. I mean, you would think he would, you know.
Well, you would hope. That doesn't mean that it will. It doesn't mean that you hope, right?
Well,
we can always hope. But again, it's funny. It is one of these things that, you know, I mean, we will see how it evolves. But I think, you know, obviously, especially at this climate where we're just coming, you know, we're trying to get out of the Middle East, Central Asia. There's just so much political blowback for this, that right now that I don't think the American public cares enough unless they can try and sell it as being like it's big, you know, communist plot, you know, by the former Soviet Union or something.
That does seem to be a kind of a right-wing reaction to the whole thing.
Trying to
sell it as part of this, you know, it's weird. The right always seems to have this kind of fantasy in a way about 1980s, communist fight against communism.
But the problem they're running up against now is the fact that a lot of most of the kids that are coming of age now have no recollection, understanding of the old Cold War system.
Yeah, but
you know what?
Most of the kids
read about it, but they don't have any sense about it. Really.
Most of the kids coming of age now, I doubt, are reading about it. I doubt are
exactly.
They don't give a shit. They show up. They want to opt in, right? Isn't that the new thing? They want to opt into whatever kind of fame they can get, and then. That's it. They don't care politically. They don't want to think about the bigger picture and actually develop an opinion. You know.
Oh no! They don't want to do that.
No. They don't want to vote, which is why they're not voting. You know, unless they get super jazzed about one thing or another, it's not part of kind of youth culture. There's no political youth culture.
Not at all. And that's the part that that's the big problem. I mean, Charlie, how do you change ambivalence, you know, and how do you get people to buy into, getting politically involved is where it all starts. Now, right now, Russia, the political involvement has always been relatively minimal, even though you can have a legislative body and, and the president and the prime minister and all these wonderful things in place, but it doesn't really mean anything if in practice it's not there. And that's like in Iran. Iran has a major league, which is a parliament, but all the final decisions are made by the Council of the Guardian and the Ayatollah.
Yeah.
You know, yep. So you can be dressed up, call yourself what you want, but the truth of the matter is it doesn't really mean a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's the hard part of it. It's the hard reality of this scenario. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... But I think I'm going to be optimistic.
Huh?
I'm going to be optimistic. I think the sanctions are going to have an effect. I don't think Putin is as strong as he wants everyone to think within the country. I think he's going to have to react. I don't think the oligarchs that really run the show will be making as much money once these sanctions and asset freezes take effect. And that they may have to back, or he may have to back down on the rhetoric a bit. But I think that Crimea will stay part of Russia. However, I think there will be a guarantee to keep all the Russian bases there.
Yeah.
That's my prediction. See, now, because that's what they want. They want to keep the Russian bases there in the pipeline.
Yeah, and I'm usually the optimist as well, but I'm going to play out the other way and say that I think Crimea is going to cede to Russia.
Yeah.
And the Russian bases will be there, and there'll be some uproar, and then in a matter of months, it'll be just forgotten about. It'll be one of those things people will be pissed about.
Kind of like Georgia. You
know, and then it'll become insignificant, and, you know, everybody will make big...
And there are still Georgian separatists blowing shit up all over Russia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's exactly what it'll play out.
Nobody cares anymore.
Yeah. And that's what happened. Our memories are about, you know, about an hour long. We don't have any concept of length of time. And so the news today would be forgotten tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And maybe not even forgotten. Usually, if it's told in the morning, it's forgotten by the afternoon. So
that's pretty amazing.
And that's a problem. You know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You have to have concerted effort and pressure from the international community in order to bring about some change. Doesn't mean that Putin might concede on some things. I don't think he's going to concede on giving Crimea back to Ukraine. I think if he were going to do that, he would have made a deal to keep the base.
So will they be Russians or will they be Crimean?
Well, that'll be an interesting question. I think it really won't matter. I think it'll be part of the Russian Federation, and they'll just be it's a matter of they'll probably be called Russians. You know, they'll be living in the Crimea, but they'll probably be Russians. Russian Crimeans.
Yeah.
That's the game. I think.
How long do you think that'll take?
You're talking anywhere from now to the end of the year that you can see this all trans. You know, by summer we'll know. By summer we'll have an idea what's going to really happen. The referendum's on the 16th.
Yeah,
that'll tell what the next step's going to be. And then by the time that happens, then you go through the blowback of that and all the sanctions and all the he said she said stuff. Then by the time this all settles, at the torch side, the fall, monk side could be by the end of the year.
Hmm.
Yeah, but it's going to be. It's going to be messy, and I said last week that I thought it was going to be, it could get a little messy and a little bloody. But I still think there's going to be some conflict in this. I don't see it happening without with a little bit of blood being spilled. It may not be as significant as the time goes on. And when wars happen, they tend to start happening right away. This one seems to be, there doesn't seem to be a big push that way.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it as, because once Russia goes and starts pulling triggers, then their international support wanes, and so they really politically need to try and temper what they do in terms of their response.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. So stay tuned for the next episode.
I know. I don't even know what's coming up next. We got to get Faulkner on now that he's mayor.
Yeah, and a new police chief too.
We got a new police chief
on too.
Yeah, she seems very polished.
Yeah, she does. She does seem
quite
polished.
She very, very polished to me. I wonder I wonder if you could break down those walls. You know, I bet she
could. Well, it may take some time. She's so new in the office, she's probably trying to make sure she doesn't say anything the wrong way. So it doesn't shut up and not say anything or just say a few words. So,
She's
too new yet to really get to go too far, I think.
Mm-hmm. She seems very smart and astute and very polished.
Yeah, she seems very likable, too. She seems very likable, too.
Yeah, she's a triathlete.
Young lady. Yeah.
So.
That's awesome, mm-hmm. It's nice to have, it was too early to tell what her legacy is going to be, but at least it's nice to see that we've now finally progressed to cross the gender gap and around to somebody, for women to have a greater say in this. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. And I'd be curious to talk to Faulkner. You know, he's supposedly the president of everyone in San Diego, not just the Republican Party, although at his election, standing immediately to his right and behind him was the chairman of the Lincoln Club, which is the conservative Republican. I guess you'd call them a pack, or they're a club. They're the ones that bought a lot of the they bought a lot of mailers and did a lot of work for Faulkner to get elected. And that's fine, but, you know, that's who they are. So
yeah,
I wonder how it's, yeah, exactly, what that means long term and what it means, you know, is he as open to the other side of the aisle because he has to be, or because the city council's majority Democrat, or is there something else, or is he really this way, you know? I mean, I've talked to the guy. He seems like a nice enough guy, and he seems, you know, to be genuine, and he came across as very sincere and genuine to me, but I wonder how things would shake out if he had a Republican majority on the council.
I mean, like anything else, I think that hopefully we'll get him back on our podcast again, and we'll be able to query him on this issue. I think it'll be very interesting to see how this issue shapes up and
especially after he's had a little time to do stuff. Hasn't really had that much time to do anything.
So it'll be interesting to see what his commentary would be. Since it's early in the game, I think everybody's watching to see what his true colors are going to be, and hopefully, you know, from what I know of him, and you know, we both know him, you know, he's a decent guy. So we'll see, figure out how much is going to be him, and how much is going to be the people who are behind him, and that's the next telltale sign here.
Yeah.
Yep, we'll see you in another week, and stay tuned for the next podcast.